Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the world's allegedly least corrupt country in the world. And we know that it's really not corrupt because most of the judges are related. Am I very amazing, spectacular, somewhat magnanimous guest is Nancy Duterte. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I think I am somewhat magnanimous. That's true.
Yeah. I like to be accurate. It's a journalism thing. And I'd like to just get you to introduce yourself to the audience, those who aren't aware of you, and we'll just get on with the discussion.
Introduce myself. Well, Nancy Duterte. I'm known as the Skeptical Psychic. I can always be found at theskepticalpsychic.com. I am the nutshell version is I'm an attorney who made a very stunning detour and became a trained psychic detective, medium, medical intuitive, energy healer, remote viewer, paranormal investigator, author, teacher, lecturer, and former CBS radio show host. How's that?
Quite the litany. It's fantastic. Okay. What's on your mind today? Because I know you've been out working a whole lot, been on tours and stuff like that. What's been going on for you recently?
You know, I think, well, the most recent thing is I was a presenter up at a UFO conference called Experiencers Speak 2014. It was up in Portland, Maine. And it was absolutely just shocking, informative, magnificent. It was really much more than I expected. I had a really good reception up there also. Sold out of my book, Psychic Intuition, so that was a good thing. And also I attended another UFO conference over the weekend down in New York City. So I think I'm sort of on a UFO track right now. Also, remote viewing track, but primarily, I would say UFO.
Where does the psychic and the alien kind of is there a bridge between them, or is there like a clear separation?
That's a great question, and I have to tell you that you know in going into this whole thing, because as you know, I sort of have gone into everything backwards. I didn't start out psychic, didn't come from a psychic family, nothing genetic. We never talked about anything like this. And then I sort of walked into it, but through training, you know, not as something that I just did. And then I was absolutely positive that there was no relationship really between the psychic stuff and paranormal stuff. And when I say paranormal, I mean like, you know, ghosts and spirits and all that. And it took me a long time to slowly get into the paranormal field. And by the time I did that, I was absolutely, I mean, I was just positive. There was no relationship between psychic stuff, paranormal stuff on the one hand, and UFO stuff on the other. And what I kind of, and again, I sort of fell into it somewhat backwards. I've had a few, I would say, UFO-related experiences in my life, but like anything else, I completely discounted them. I had an experience that there was no way to discount it. I mean, my daughter and I both witnessed a mothership, and we watched it for quite a while. It was the size of a football field. It was all lit up with orange lights. It was about a half a mile away, 500 to 1,000 feet up in the sky. It was just, I've never seen anything that huge. And it was sitting there, no noise, no nothing. And it emanated this, it was like a giant white orb. And the light was completely unlike any light I've ever seen in the sky. It was luminescent and solid white, and it didn't reflect off the clouds the way all the other lights do. And it didn't have little radiating beams the way any, if you look up, you know, any airplane or anything that we fly in the sky has lights that have little rays coming off of them when you look at them. This not at all. It was probably about 15 to 20 feet in diameter, and it kind of circled it curlicued around this giant boomerang-shaped mothership, went behind it, came back, reattached itself, and then the entire craft either shielded or dematerialized in three phases. The wings went first, then the midsection, and then the central part, and it was like you just, you know, with your remote, you just turned off a TV set. It didn't fly away. So anyway, so when we both saw that, and you sort of can't, it changes everything. And I started on my former show, Hot Leads Cold Cases, I started interviewing people involved in ufology in the UFO field. And I started to realize the more I talked to people, the more I read, there's a connection. And there is, it's your question is great, because the presentation that I gave up in Maine had to do with exolinguistics. It's basically, how do you talk to an alien? And I do believe, I'm absolutely 100% convinced that all of my training in this psychic and paranormal field is extremely useful to the UFO field, where a lot of times the people who are involved in either contact or abductions, that kind of thing, they may have some psychic background, or they may become psychic as a result of their experiences, but a lot of times they're not. So they're skills that I know can be taught, and that's sort of what I was hoping to let people know.
I've got this idea as well that psychic potential is kind of exists within all of us. And I think as children, it's really intense and they simply get browbeaten out of it. Oh, no, you know, don't talk about that or anything. And they just stop seeing it after a while by denying that it's there.
I think it's even more subtle than that. I mean, yeah, you're right. People do get browbeaten out of it. And then I have taught many, many, many students who wanted to get their abilities back, who will tell, you know, that exact story. You know, oh, when I was a little kid, everybody told me I was crazy. They ran away from me. They were frightened. My parents told me to be quiet, you know, stop talking, stop saying that so-and-so, you know, has a health issue or that they're pregnant or that they're going to die. You know, so people get frightened, that's for sure. But I think there's another piece of it, which is that in the way that we learn how to speak, and this goes back to language, by the way, when you speak, there's a syntax and there's an organization, there's a structure, a grammar, and you have to go from, it's sequential. So you go from point A to point B when you, you know, say a sentence. Okay. And by the time you get to the end of the sentence, you've used up a certain amount of time and energy, and particularly time, since it's linear. when you're getting into the psychic field and you're getting into holistic knowledge, you're bypassing that and it gets much, much, much faster. So you can take in a huge amount of information and you can convey a huge amount of information because it's not linear. Do you see what I'm saying?
It, sort of like if you see a movie like Fight Club, for instance, and then you watch it the second time and you suddenly notice all the subtle nuances that actually kind of gave you the end of the plot, sort of like that?
First, I love Fight Club, and I've probably seen that 50 times. I keep looking at the subtle nuances. It has more to do with actual, not so much looking at the nuances. It has to do with
listening out, watching for the signs. I remember one time, Nancy, I was coming up from my car up to my apartment, and I go past the washing line, and all my washing's dry, and a little part of my brain says, Vinny, get down all that washing, it's going to rain. And I go, nah, I'm not going to listen to it. And I get up, and as soon as I get up to my apartment, boom, starts raining.
Yeah, because otherwise you would have to sit around, you'd have to maybe listen to a news report, you'd have to have somebody, you know, in authority or know that you're looking at thunderclouds and they're way out in the horizon. You know, you'd have to do research, an investigation, you have to put together your data. That all takes time. And the same thing, I guess I'm talking more about telepathy. If you convey a message to somebody by speaking, it takes time to get from the beginning of the sentence to the end of the sentence. That's time. Well, you can convey information, you know, like the speed of light, probably faster, actually, if you're using this more holistic sense of psychic communication. Because you can, it's like, you know, the expression, a picture's worth a thousand words?
Yeah.
It's the same idea. Same basic idea.
Is there a possibility that there's some kind of agenda to quell psychic abilities? Is it seen as a threat or a military or otherwise?
I don't know. Every once in a while, I'm intrigued by the simultaneous lack of intrigue and the over intensely focus on such things. So I couldn't tell you.
What about weaponization? Because that's what I always found about things that are really amazing and can be used for benefit or medical treatments and things like that, is that there's always some group of scumbags that goes, man, this is really amazing. It's so wonderful. Let's weaponize it.
Well, I mean, it has been weaponized, of course.
Well, in what way has those psychic abilities been weaponized?
I think I told you that one of my mentors was Ingo Swann. He is known as he just passed away a year ago. He's known as the father of remote viewing. Remote viewing, he developed it for the CIA. So it's a psychic spy program. And it was originally done allegedly because the U.S. was afraid that Russia had gotten a little bit too advanced in the psychic field and that we were falling behind. So they put a fair amount of money, not a ton of money into it. I mean, over 20 years, I think it was not much more than about 22, 23 million. And then they dropped it very suddenly. And basically, I mean, that program has just gone, it's been privatized, so it's gone underground to some extent. But, you know, if you talk to any of the remote viewers, of course, not only, it can be weaponized in the sense of spying, and it can be weaponized in a much more, in relation to things like, you know, health or, you know, the human body. So, yeah, it's, you know, in the same way that people dismiss, you know, things as like voodoo and stuff like that, or putting, you know, pins into a voodoo doll and saying, well, that's going to affect whoever the victim is. There's some very interesting ways that people have, you know, used this in not such good ways. And I certainly know remote viewers who have been asked to use their skills in negative ways, and who have refused.
What kind of things, like messing with somebody's head, whispering into them, "I'm behind you," you know, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, people have experienced that. I don't know whether they've been asked to go be behind people, certainly to look at what people are doing, of course. Worse than that.
You know what I'd do? If I had an underground psychic program or something like that, I'd be messing with all the people that are in control of everything and trying to dominate them using my above the law, you know, top secret clearance and whatnot, and just think, hey, I've got unlimited power, I've got unlimited resources, and I've got a completely undetectable form of mind control that I can use remotely on world leaders. Boom! We're set, baby. At least that's what I'd do if I was a criminal sociopath with more money and power than God.
I think once you get over the hurdle of saying, okay, yeah, I believe that this kind of ability actually works, then you get probably into the realm of, oh, maybe I don't really want too many people to know that this works for exactly the kinds of reasons you're talking about.
I have this great concern that this might be a possibility because there's no defense against it. It reminds me of the one of the opening scenes in the first X-Men film where the people actually were talking about how there are mutants out there that are so powerful that they can enter our minds and control our thoughts, taking away our God-given free will. And there's been many scenes in that series of movies exploring the potential of psychic abilities to freeze people, read their minds, control them. And I was just wondering how much of that is based on reality and how much of it is just totally fictionalized.
I think that, you know, I was once walking down the street with Ingo, and I forget what we were talking about, and he said something like, you know, I think that people really hate the idea, they cannot stand the idea that you could actually read their mind. I said, yeah, I know that. And it's true if you think about it. Now, I have many friends who they can read my mind. I can read their minds. Now, all the time, no. But you can do it enough, especially if you put your intention there, that you can sort of read people. And you can, depending on your abilities, you may have, you may be able to astral travel. You may be able to show up. You know, I certainly have had friends who have been able to check in. For example, when I was in college, I was friendly with, I had two friends. They were brother and a sister. Their mother, and I didn't realize this at the time, was she was one of the top alien channelers in the world. She was quite famous. I had no idea. But her kids were these incredibly, you know, straight-laced, down-to-earth, no-nonsense, like scary. They went into computers and journalism and became very, they did very well in their fields. But they would tell me stuff like, well, yeah, you know, mom was channeling some alien the other day, and within 17 seconds, she put on 40 pounds and popped all the buttons on her shirt, and her belt dropped off, and, you know, she had no control over it. That took her years to lose the weight. Or they told me, yeah, mom, she was doing some astral traveling last night, just checking up on us, making sure that we weren't staying out too late and partying. And a third, a friend, somebody that we all knew, would tell me, yeah, I smelled a particular fragrance, which was her perfume fragrance, as she went through my room. She was a roommate of one of the sister. And, you know, then the mother would tell the kids what she saw them doing the previous night so she could verify it. So you can read people that way. Actually, I had an interesting thing too. I was told by a friend of mine, this was, I don't know, a couple of years ago, I was under anesthesia. I was having a procedure done. And while that was happening, I apparently showed up in her room. And she lives all the way across the country, over on the West Coast. And I went off about all kinds of stuff. I was apparently complaining about something to do with, something I had written, and I seemed to be pulling reams of paper off of this printing press, and I'm angry and complaining. I have my hands on my hips. And then I was, I think I was swearing in French. I do speak French. She didn't know any of this stuff. Turns out, as I told her, that right before I went in for that procedure, I had had to sign my contract with my publisher, who said, you have, you know, whatever it was, 90 days to put this thing together. So, you know, whether you're traveling to them or they're traveling to you, or whether it's all being done through the mind, whether you're visiting remotely, whether you're out of body, everybody's still gathering information. And so we need to give up the idea that we are, you know, these independent little beings with our private little thoughts. That just isn't the case.
Well, is astral traveling a lot less intrusive than normal traveling? I mean, is there some kind of like a cosmic TSA agent that will mess with your day if you're not doing it right?
No, nobody's going to mess with you. Not as far as I know. I mean, maybe there is, but not as far as I know.
So there's no like demons or other dimensional beings or something like that are just going to like, I don't know, latch onto you like in some dark sci-fi movie and suck your brain juices out of your astral skull.
You know, one of the most famous people in the paranormal field. His name was Hans Holzer, and he passed away a few years ago. But I had a chance to go and talk to him. I visited him at his apartment, interviewed him. And I think I asked him at that point, I said, you know, is it true with mediums that, you know, when they leave their bodies and they're stepping aside, as they say, so that another being, whatever that being is, can channel through their physical body? I said, I've heard that, you know, they're attached by a silver cord. And if the silver cord breaks, well, then, oops, you know, you lost your body forever, for eternity. And he started laughing. He said, no, there's no such thing as a silver cord. And no, you don't have to worry about that. Now, I've heard people say otherwise. So my theory is, well, let's be conservative. You know, if you got a good thing going, don't mess with it. So that's why I'm, I don't do serious deep trance channeling. For that reason.
Too risky.
I think it's risky because I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And frankly, I don't want to find out.
You've not seen have you gone through reports, evidence, anecdotes, things of that nature where people have been psychically attacked? I've did a episode on psychopaths one time. And one of the stories that the researcher brought out was about a psychopath that was in prison that got visited by a little boy who was doing a little bit of a study for school or whatever. And then that little boy apparently got raped or something like that in his room, in his mind. And it was that psychopath doing it or apparently or something. There's some kind of astral projection or power base that they're capable of sending out on the wavelength and actually bringing it down into their victim somehow. Or at least that's what their theory was. I don't know if you've heard anything like that.
I don't know about that. One of my other main mentors, Nancy Orlin Weber, is a psychic detective. She's also a nurse. And at one time, she was a head nurse in a psychiatric hospital. So, I mean, she used to tell me all the time that there's psychotics can be extremely psychic. It doesn't mean it's the same thing, but a lot of psychotics, the problem is that they tend to be among the group of very vulnerable people. And by vulnerable, usually you're talking about, you know, young kids, teenagers especially, people who their health isn't good. They're depressed. They're a little bit, you know, schizophrenic, psychotic, that kind of thing. And they're just more prone to being psychically attacked. Now, whether those people are also going on the attack, I don't know anything about that. I just know from the reverse. So they need higher levels of protection, you know, than your average person does.
What do you mean by protection? How exactly can you protect yourself psychically against stuff? Just keeping healthy and not hanging around with douchebags, or?
Well, you see, you got it all figured out. Yeah, I mean, you keep yourself as healthy as you can. I mean, your psychic abilities definitely go down when you're not feeling well. You don't get into addictions. You don't get into, you know, drugs or alcohol. And if you're working, you never, ever, ever do any of that stuff because it just clouds up the ability. You keep yourself positive. What I tell my students all the time is tune into your, not just tune in, know your psychic or your spiritual allies. Because when you're wandering around in the spiritual world or the psychic world, you know, we're kind of stuck. A lot of us is stuck here in our physical bodies, in the physical three-dimensional world. So we're at somewhat of a disadvantage. So know who you're dealing with, at least, you know, the good guys, the guys on your side. Know who they are before you go walking around in the middle of, you know, some place that you don't really know.
Of course, that can be very difficult if you're a teenager to know good from bad. That's kind of what growing up is about. My very amazing, spectacular guest is Nancy Duterte, the conservative psychic. There we go.
The skeptical psychic.
The skeptical conservative psychic. All right. The skeptical conservative preserve psychic. All right. We will be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you want it to continue, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and subscribe today. There's also a couple of products on there, the Blue Shield, protecting yourself from EMF and EMR, wireless radiation, 3G and Bluetooth. That's kind of stuff is nasty. By the way, if you're a Mac user, they automatically have the Bluetooth on. Automatically, and that stuff is nasty. So right up in the top right hand corner next to your clock or whatever, there's a little Bluetooth symbol. If you just click that with your mouse and you turn that Bluetooth off, you'll stop a rating adding your thingies. Yes, we'll be right back.
If you place a thing in the center of your life that lacks the power to nourish, it will eventually poison everything that you are and destroy you. As simple a thing as an idea or your perspective on yourself or the world. No one can be the source of your content. It lies within, in the center.
Only with mellow are you thinking of to slide through. Only with mellow are you thinking of to slide through.
Don't let nothing ride you.
If the sun on the moon should give way to die,
they would immediately go out.
One swallow don't make a summer, but tomorrow has to start somewhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Oh my god. I don't know what to say about New Zealand anymore. Honestly, it's in the middle of an election, so it doesn't really matter, because however bad the country is, it's just going to get worse, so there's very little point in describing its current state of affairs. My amazing, spectacular, again, somewhat magnanimous special guest is Nancy Duterte, the skeptical psychic, otherwise known as the conservative psychic. Well, she's not actually known as that. I just made that up, but yeah. So, Nancy.
Hummus.
What was that about? Wurzel Gummidge as hummus?
Don't go spreading rumors. Oh. Skeptical.
Yeah. Well, hence, it wasn't a rumor, because I just admitted right after saying it that I just made it up. And, yeah, does it mean it's spread if it's only said just to the same person right there and then is corrected directly afterwards? I'm not sure. Rumors are a dodgy thing.
Depends on your listenership.
It does. I have a pretty discerning listenership. which means that if I say anything that offends them, they stop listening to me forever, which is good, because I don't like those kind of people listening to me, because they're kind of too reactionary. You know. In fact, that's another thing I'd like to talk to you about, just in a general kind of way, is people's reactions, right? And I'm sure that there must be these entirely negative and cynical people out there who will dismiss everything that you're saying, even though even if you've produced mountains of evidence, it doesn't matter to them. It's just outside of their realm of possibility, and so therefore it can't be possibly existing.
Right. Well, they used to bother me, and I am no longer disturbed by those people, because now I just feel sorry for them, because they haven't taken the journey. They haven't bothered to explore. They are they just have these prefab ideas that are really simple for them, so that they can live their lives and not be concerned about things that are a little bit too complicated for them. And that's fine. You know, they should do that. But what I have discovered is that usually, you know, even if, you know, I get some rolling eyeballs or people saying, almost every single person that I talk to about this kind of stuff will at some point pull me aside and tell me their private story. So everybody's got a story. Everybody seems to be lacking in the courage to talk about these kinds of things. That's all right. They'll get there. They'll figure it out, you know. So I just don't worry about them.
Well, it's funny you should mention that about courage to say it, because that was actually something like my Facebook status today. There was a big meeting in Auckland, New Zealand, where Julian Assange and Edward Snowden attended a town hall meeting via video conferencing software with Kim.com, talking about the state surveillance, spying, and all of that kind of jazz. And I presume you've heard about the New World Order, the global conspiracy of banking scumbags to like take over everything. And it's a pretty self-evident if you look at the evidence and the things that these bankers themselves even admit that they're trying to do. And one thing frustrated me during the conference is that Assange, Snowden, Kim.com, the other commentators that were there, they all perfectly described the New World Order and the intelligence apparatus and all of this kind of stuff that they're using to try and enslave everybody. And they described everything perfectly the exact same way I would, except they very, very carefully avoided saying that full picture truth, that world government, that New World Order, that scumbaggery element or psychopathy or anything of that nature. And it frustrated me, Nancy, because...
You mean they refuse to just qualify it that way, or to characterize it like that?
Well, it's more like if you're describing a car without saying that it's a car. Like if you describe steering wheel and wheels and an engine and an exhaust and doors and a roof and everything, and then people say, you're describing a car, and you go, no, I'm not. That kind of thing.
Right, okay.
And it was really frustrating to me because myself and a number of colleagues in New Zealand who are far more knowledgeable than I, who have written books, who have exposed copious quantities of scumbaggery, have been saying everything that these guys said in this town hall and more, and have been doing so for years. And I was quite frustrated. I wrote a bit of a scathing piece about that, but also, you know, giving big ups to thank you for coming out and saying a little bit of the truth or whatever you could. But somebody actually commented, and he argued that speaking the full truth gets people put off, you know, and that I should probably turn it down a bit tone it down a bit if I want people to listen to me.
It's a little bit late.
Well, the thing is, I agree with that sentiment that if you don't tell people the truth, they're more likely to listen to you. However, I argue that if no one has the balls to say the whole truth, it doesn't matter how long you dance around the edges, no one will ever be comfortable enough to accept it. And nobody else will be encouraged or inspired by the courage it takes to tell it to a room full of cowards too afraid to listen.
I understand that. But the thing is, you never know, particularly with those two. I mean, really with those two, you have no idea what kinds of pressures they're under. I mean, they obviously took very unique and very, very courageous pathways to do what they both did. But, you know, maybe they've had to jam on the brakes for reasons that, you know, we'll never know. In which case, it just means that somebody else has to pick up the mantle and you know, run with whatever the larger picture is to paint that picture for people. But you're right. I mean, I think there's a problem overall in this world, you know. We're lacking leadership, and we're lacking people who have the courage to take a position. Because we all know, taking a position, I mean, you just get shot from every direction. I mean, people just go for you. But that's what it takes. So
it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. But that's, we need that. And I would say also that, you know, the world has gotten so unbelievably complex, and everything is so, you know, interrelated. And with the U.S., certainly, I mean, all the issues that are going on in the Middle East right now, here we are in this strangely weird and uncomfortable position of having to now, you know, negotiate with people that we were, you know, screaming at and threatening, you know, a year ago, or, you know, invading or not invading, or, you know, now today I'm your ally, tomorrow I'm not, or maybe we'll switch around, or maybe I'll take one of your allies or you take one of mine. It's just craziness. So it's very hard for anybody to really want to take a position, you know, because you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring.
I think this is part of a deliberate agenda to make people switch off, because if you see two people going, you're a scumbag, no, 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 you're a scumbag, the person just switches off because you can't tell who's actually a scumbag.
I think that's the best defense is always to, you know, best defense is good offense.
Best defense is a good offense.
Well, there you go.
Well, my friend Jonathan Eisenman told me that if you're a Nazi, the best thing to accuse your opponents of is being Nazis.
Oh yeah, of course. No, I I know that quite well.
And then the other part is charlatans. Do you think that within your kind of field of research that there are actually people who deliberately mislead and deceive others for their own self-aggrandizement, accumulation of power, resources, that kind of thing?
I'm sure there are. I have absolutely no doubt, because you find those people in any field that you go into. But I think more people go into it with desires to help other people, but they get caught up in this sort of performance anxiety of, well, you know, I've said that I have these special powers, and I've got somebody out there who is looking for me to, you know, perform these special powers like right now. And if I don't, they're going to think that either that I'm not what I say I am, or that I'm not very powerful. So people get stuck in a bind.
It could be, actually, you don't know how these powers actually work, son.
Well, yeah, I mean, nobody...
I mean, my wife, for example, she just went to take her van to get its fuel pump fixed, and then the oil pump broke a couple of weeks after, you know, like the two separate pieces of a car, and she still thinks that the people at the garage deliberately sabotaged her car. It's like, baby, you don't know how the machine works, okay? Neither do I. And unfortunately, when you're dealing with somebody, your suspicions, if they're not based on evidence or perhaps some kind of knowledge in the area with which to verify those suspicions, you're kind of taking a stab in the dark, and you might stab somebody you love.
Well, she's got a good theory. I mean, you got to give her that. It's a good theory. It's not a correct theory, but... You know, she's working on it.
Oh yeah, we'll see how the documents declassified come out. You know.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the government, we know that there's remote viewing programs and things like that, and we talked about weaponization of the psychic field. I wonder, is there any kind of attempts to, I don't know, ensure a distrust? Because basically I found, like, let's say in movies, for instance, sci-fi movies in particular, they'll put out a piece of technology or a piece of storyline or dialogue or something of that nature which relates very much to what's going on today. For example, the movie Surrogates was about these artificial robots that everybody was plugged into, and those robots would actually be them, basically. They'd be walking around. They'd just be at home in a machine, and their robot would live their life for them, and they'd be in full control of it the whole time. And then about less than a year later, it comes out in the news that the US military has developed those exact robots. And I'm just wondering what kind of film references and things of that nature you could probably point to that have some basis in reality in terms of psychic studies.
You know, first of all, I didn't see Surrogate, so I don't know what that was, you know.
It's just an example. It happens all the time in all sorts of movies.
Yeah, I'm probably the wrong person because I don't see that many movies. The last one that I can really remember that sticks out in my head was the one that they clearly did that was sort of loosely based on the whole remote viewing program, which is Men Who Stare at Goats.
I've seen that one, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I know a lot of the characters who were loosely, portrayed in that movie. But, you know, that kind of stuff, yeah, I mean, there's people, I would say that they're probably doing that plus way more. I mean, they're not really showing, you know, anywhere near the capacity of what people are doing. But there, I think there is a, you know, from the time that we have movies to the time that things are happening in our world, I think they're really interesting correlations. And I don't know whether it's because you've got movie producers who were sort of being given an inside track that, like, for example, Steven Spielberg in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you know, he was allegedly given a whole stack of documents off of an Air Force base so that he could come up with the concepts that he did, and they were extremely accurate. And I'm sure that happens in a lot of different fields.
And in terms of, let's say, the government or the alleged New World Order, if you want to call it that, would they have an agenda to suppress knowledge of psychic abilities and perhaps because it would make it easier to control people if they didn't know about this realm?
You know, you got me in a very hypothetical realm, but let's say hypothetically you had a New World Order that was somehow in alliance with certain otherworldly entities that already had a lot of those capabilities, then you might want to use those capabilities. You might want to suppress those capabilities in others. I don't know.
You know, I always see human potential as a threat to tyranny, right? Because human potential is unlimited, and the thing about tyranny is that doesn't have any limits either. There's no, I mean, can you name me, like, what's the pinnacle? What's the worst possible thing you could anybody could ever do? Something that would actually make them the worst human being on earth? What act? And the answer is whatever's worse than the last person, because there's no upper limit to it. Just like.
Upper level to evil, yeah.
And I was just wondering, though, is that there's an upper level to or lower level of goodness in people, and this whole psychic phenomenon, it kind of, I'm starting to wonder what sort of element to it is actually more spiritual. If we're not just talking about the universe in and of itself. I mean, are they really gods or angels that are simply outside of the 3D realms and people's ability to perceive them that can be reached out to or can possibly be in the background subtly influencing people, whispers in the ears or giving you a sensation, a little bit of courage at the right moment, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, all of the above. That's my experience over the last, couple of decades, which is, yeah, absolutely. And the more, by the way, that I'm getting into this whole UFO field, I used to think it was, a bunch of fanatics who were sort of saying, well, the ETs are the equivalent of angels and devils. And, of course, they got all the fundamentalists and different religions all upset. Because they, and they were saying, well, these are a bunch of kooks who were saying that. Well, the more you look into the characteristics of people who have had contact or abductions with these different types of entities and the way in which they show up, the similarities are unbelievable. Right down to, and I'll just give you a couple of examples. I mean, right down to... a lot of the kinder entities or the more, what I would call higher, more spiritually advanced, sending information through light and primarily, they're surrounded in white light. Well, that sounds kind of familiar. And they do seem to fly and they do engage in things, spontaneous healing of humans. And then you have other types of entities, for example, that are known for pretty nasty sounding abductions where people do experience huge amounts of pain, apparently. And a lot of those entities have, I think it's absolutely ironic. I mean, they have a smell. And I can tell you the first time I ever get contacted by somebody, this was an abductee who was looking for help because nobody would listen to him, couldn't get anything in the more conservative worlds, and he was checking around the UFO worlds. Nobody could help him, so he got in touch with me. And, I saw photos of him. He's a really big, muscular guy. Apparently not, I don't think he was afraid of too many things, but these beings that would come into his bedroom at night, he was absolutely terrified of because they would, take him, they would abduct him. And he had no control the way a lot of them don't. They are paralyzed through some type of, I don't know whether it's through a frequency vibration or through a mental vibration. Maybe it's the same thing.
A kind of a force field? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. And people report the only thing they can move is their eyeballs. That's it. And they're absolutely terrified, and they're floated out through windows, through walls. I mean, I was just having dinner a couple weeks ago with a woman who I remember her story. She was floated out out of her 12-story apartment in New York City when I was living there. And I said to myself, well, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. Well, she's got more than 100 witnesses. And finally, and I remember when this happened too, one of them happened to be the former Secretary General of the UN. And his, I think his chauffeur and his one of his attachés. So crazy stuff happens. But my point is, this fellow that I was talking to, he said, yeah, and these things that are so evil looking, they have a smell. I said, what's the smell? Oh, they smell, I don't know, kind of like rotten eggs. Oh, kind of like sulfuric. Well, if you go back to the traditional concept of hell and the devils, you got the smell of sulfur.
Brimstone.
Yeah. So it wouldn't surprise me that a lot of our, the angels and demons origins within our religions may come from these kinds of entities. That wouldn't surprise me.
What if most of our religions are actually based on aliens and they just tell people, oh, it's God? Yeah. And that kind of thing.
Sure. I mean, you can easily, once you get into this stuff and you start seeing the facts, you can easily say, yeah, that's kind of logical, actually. Whether I prefer, I don't know whether it's a preference or whether it's my feeling about the spirituality, my sense is you don't reach the level of God. You might get close, but it's not God. And for me, I think, you know, God is something closer in equivalence to the consciousness of, you know, the all of our universe. So that these entities are still, a lot of them are somewhat physical with, you know, three-dimensional or interdimensional. And, but that doesn't rise to the level of what I consider God. That's a little different.
Well, God's all powerful, all knowing, all this, all that. And as far as I know, no humans ever achieved that. I mean, not yet.
But I know you're working on it, Vinny.
Well, no, I'm not working on it. I've decided that trying to achieve godly status is something I'll never achieve. And I'm quite happy about that because it's a lot of responsibility being God. And concept that I've found is that all it is about striving to your personal image of your higher self. You know, like, for example, my God is somebody who looks kind of like me, sounds kind of like me, except they're way better and they're perfect in every way. Flawless, something that I could never possibly hope to achieve. And it is my belief that if you strive towards the impossible, knowing that you'll never achieve it, just because it is your higher self, just because it's amazing in and of itself, that's the way to live your life.
Absolutely, I agree with you. I mean, with one small exception, I would just say your higher self, yeah, that is a piece of God, you know, but there's many, 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 many other parts. Other than that, I agree with you.
See, sometimes people, if you want to get in touch with their higher self, just smoke weed, you know, it works.
I don't know that that works.
Oh, no, sorry, that's getting yourself higher. I forgot, there's a difference. We've got only a couple of minutes left in the broadcast with you here today, Nancy. I'd love it if you'd be able to, I don't know, if you've got any pearls of wisdom or websites or products and things of that nature that you want to throw out there, go for your life.
Let's see. Well, I mean, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, they always can on my website, which is theskepticalpsychic.com. In terms of what I've been doing recently, no. I mean, I think this Experiencers Speak 2014, the UFO conference for contactees and abductees and, you know, anybody who's been in touch with the alien world, they should be coming out with DVDs, I think, of the different presenters' speeches. So, you know, if anybody's interested, they could probably do it that way and listen to my speech on exolinguistics. Or how to speak to an alien. Other than that, no, I'm working on, I have several things that I'm working on, but nothing concrete other than I still have got my book, Psychic Intuition, Everything You Ever Wanted to Ask But Were Afraid to Know, that's out there and available on Amazon, a bunch of other places. That's about it.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in. I hope you've actually enjoyed this little interview with Nancy here, because she's one of the most fantastic women I know. And I know a lot of fantastic women, really.
You're so nice.
Yeah.
See, now you made my day.
Yeah, I'm good like that. And ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you could make my day, considering my name's Eastwood, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I know him.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Maybe you could introduce me, because I've always wanted to say, hello, Mr. Eastwood. And like, hello, Mr. Eastwood.
He's a very kind person. He really is.
Well, he would be, you know. I mean, look, if you're going to blow people away for the bulk of the 70s and the movies, you must be a really awesome dude. Okay. Go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, ladies and gentlemen, and donate today. And we also would love you to go to that KiwiBank account if you happen to be in New Zealand. You do realize that this is kind of like the only actual New Zealand alternative media that isn't like, I don't know, totally biased towards nonsense and wankery. I mean, oh my God. Oh my God, ladies and gentlemen. Your choices in New Zealand are very, very slim. So I'm going to make sure, personally, to take personal responsibility to ensure that there is a new alternative media rising out of New Zealand. not entirely like some kind of a scary alien spaceship out of a deep underground military base that's classified. We'll be right back.